Hello, and welcome to the Architectette podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Brady. Architectette is a podcast that illuminates the lesser heard stories of women plus in architecture and related fields. On today's episode of Architectette, we are exploring an alternative career path in architecture with architect Sheridan Rohrbaugh. Sheridan and I met while pursuing our bachelor degrees at Drexel University. After graduation, she worked in the industry, she went overseas to earn a master's degree, and later became a licensed architect. In 2019, she enlisted in the U.S. Navy and is now a construction manager in the Civil Engineer Corps. On today's episode, we talk about Sheridan's foundations in architecture and how she came to enlist in the U.S. Navy. We talk about her current and past roles and their benefits and limitations. Sheridan also shares tips for how to prepare for boot camp, which, hint, there are a lot of push-ups involved. We also chat about deployment, benefits, pensions, and maternity leave. If you want to learn more about Sheridan, please check out our show notes. While you're there, you can leave us a 5-star rating and review and follow us on social media for more behind the scenes content. Enjoy the episode. Sheridan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I was really excited for the opportunity to talk about some of the stuff that I did. You know, some people might not know about these opportunities, and also just to reminisce about my time in Drexel. It seems like forever ago and yesterday at the same time.
I know, it was such a significant part of our lives, and it feels like just yesterday, but it actually was like kind of a long time ago. So maybe we start with what sparked your interest in architecture, and then how did that lead you to Drexel?
Initially, I got interested in architecture because I liked art, but at the same time, you know, I liked science and math, and I just wanted to do something like art that was functional, you know, that I could see people using in the world. And I did the ACE mentoring program when I was in high school, and I really enjoyed the exercises they gave us that were pretty much like, we didn't get too far into the, you know, making a really great design, but I really enjoyed the programming portion of design, because it's just like a puzzle to solve. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what led me there. I think I knew like throughout high school that I wanted to do architecture. Mm-hmm.
And then were you local to Philadelphia that you ended up at Drexel?
Sort of. I grew up in South Jersey, so it's like an hour away. But actually both my parents had gone to Drexel, so I guess I knew about it through them that it was like close and a good school. I liked the whole 2+4 program thing where you could work. I thought that would be an awesome opportunity. I didn't really apply to too many schools. I think I applied to NJIT. I remember I got a scholar. I think it was going to cost me like $1,000 a year. And I like did not take that. And I went to Drexel, and looking back at it, I'm like, what was I thinking? But like the money when you're in high school doesn't like mean that much to you. But looking back on it, I was like, wow, I don't know why I didn't like take that decision like more seriously. But it worked out. I'm glad I went to Drexel. It was what I wanted to get out of an architecture school. Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who's listening that maybe doesn't know about the program, Drexel's program is 6 years, Bachelor of Architecture. It's 2 years of full-time school and then 4 years of working full-time at an architecture firm, presumably. I guess you could work in like a restaurant or something if you wanted to. But the goal is that you're getting work experience while also then taking the rest of your degree requirements at night. And then you graduate with a boatload of experience and potentially the ability to sit for your licensing exams. So that's kind of the draw of Drexel's program.
Right. And that was one of the best things about it. You're already used to the night school after working. So you just kind of use that time to study for the exams and knock them out right away after you graduate.
Were you able to do that?
Yeah, I finished them within the next year after graduating. So
yeah, me too. It was nice to just get them out of the way. And so when you were at Drexel, what type of jobs did you get as part of that? The first steps into the profession working in a firm?
The only job I had was at BLT Architects. I started there like November of that year when you first had the opportunity to work. Mm-hmm. And I just worked there, you know, until I graduated pretty much and through taking the exams. So I enjoyed it. Yeah. I really liked working there. I learned a lot from the specific people that I was working with, my one supervisor, he was just like, we were really on the same wavelength and he wanted to teach me a lot. So yeah, we had a nice little group there and they supported all the school stuff. And I think I did all of my, for the most part, I did all my schoolwork like in the office in the middle of the night. Would just go there.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's nice to have people that you work for that want to teach you, are familiar with the Drexel program, and also know that they're going to have to give a little bit more mentorship because you're still completing your degree. And then to also have a lot of coworkers who are going through the program, have gone through the program. The friends that I had that worked there were really happy working there and loved kind of the culture. And there was a lot of Drexel people in and out of there all the time. Mm-hmm. So after you graduated, I think you worked for a little bit more, but then you ended up in Oxford. How did that process come about?
So that was something else that I just kind of found out about during my thesis project. I was looking a lot about play spaces and vernacular architecture. I was designing a summer camp that also had like a playground element to it and was inspired by vernacular architecture around the world. So some of the research I was doing, I came across the professors that were at this particular university, and I saw that they had a program that was Master of Arts in International Architectural Regeneration and Development. So it was kind of a combination of a couple different programs, like a vernacular architecture thing, and then, you know, like urban redevelopment and some like developing country type development. So there was a lot of research stuff. You had the option whether you wanted to do like a design project or you could do more like a research written project. Mm-hmm. So I opted for that since I was like, you know, I don't want to just go to school and do design projects again because I had enough of that.
Yeah.
I'd like to, you know, learn how to write a research paper better than I did when I was in high school. Sorry, I would say it was just really cool to live abroad for a year and a half.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So when you were thinking about applying to the program, then were you packing up your life in Philadelphia? You had to quit your job. You were taking presumably like a gap year. Like what was that like? Were you married at the time or you had a partner and he came with you too?
Yeah, I don't remember the order of events of whether we were engaged when I applied or if I applied before we were engaged, but it was all around the same time. I think I actually found out that I got accepted into the program on our honeymoon. So I was like, oh, by the way, let's move to England. So that was kind of fun.
Oh, wow. Well, at least you were already celebrating. So it was nice to probably just add one more thing to celebrate. But that is really starting multiple new chapters at one time. I'm sure that was a very scary, but also very exciting time. So when you were over there, did you end up working at all or were you just focusing on school?
I guess nowadays I only think, yeah, you could telework and stuff. But, you know, back then it wasn't something that we thought of doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just took the, plus, you know, probably enough stuff to do as a student. So I just took the year, went over there. I just, you know, left it open-ended about what I would do after I got back. Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a plan that maybe you could continue working over there or you wanted to spend a year and then come back to the U.S.?
I think I was always planning to come back.
So you got your degree, then kind of what was the order of operations? You came back to the U.S. Did you go right into the Navy or were you working elsewhere? And kind of what led you to your current position?
So when I first got back, I was just, you know, looking at different jobs. I was actually looking at applying to NAFAC, which is, you know, what I work for now as an active duty member, but as a civilian. So there are some opportunities, but you kind of have to like be willing to go where the jobs are. Mm. So I just the way I applied for didn't really like have a lot of openings there. I ended up working for another small firm that had some architecture, but it was more like planning and landscape architect stuff. Mm. But the work was a little slow. I wasn't really enjoying it there either. So that's the time when I decided, you know, I'm going to go talk to a recruiter and see about doing the civil engineer corps and working for NAFAC as an active duty member. And also, not just NAFAC, they also have the CVs. When you do that, you go and you deploy with CVs and you can go build stuff in other countries. So that seemed really cool.
Oh, wow. And what does NAFAC and CVs, what do they stand for?
So the CVs were started in World War II. It was essentially they needed to have people brought into the military as contractors in order to do airfield repair and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because under the Geneva Convention, if you just had civilians out there, they could be, you know, they weren't protected in the same way. So they just started the CBs to bring in a bunch of contractors into the military. And it was kind of interesting because when I learned about this, they said the average age was like 35. So that's pretty old for, you know, people going into the military. Mm-hmm. But they've been around ever since. I guess I can't talk to it too well because I haven't been through it yet. But in peacetime, they do a lot of relationship building with other countries. Like sometimes they'll go and dig a well or build a school, mm-hmm. things like that. And then they do a lot of exercises for, you know, what things might need to be built in a time of conflict.
So in this current time, these folks are probably out in areas of active war, or I guess is the United States like technically at war right now, or we're just kind of lending a hand in multiple conflicts in multiple places?
Yeah, we're not currently at war. I think most of what the CBs are doing right now is more of those exercises and building schools and digging wells and things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. So when you went through your recruiter, what was that application process like? Was it just, here's my portfolio, here's my resume, or was it a little bit more involved than your typical architecture firm application?
Yeah, it was nothing like the architecture firm application at all. You go to talk to the recruiter, they're not just for the civil engineer corps, they're for like anything Navy. But the good thing about the Navy is when you apply, you can say, I'm applying to this specific community, the Civil Engineer Corps. The Army has a similar group, Army Corps of Engineer. Mm-hmm. But if you were to apply as an officer to the Army, you don't get to choose. You can say that's my preference, but they can send you to whatever group. They could send you to Med Services or something else. The nice thing with the Navy is, you know, I could apply to be a surface warfare officer on a ship or, you know, in a sub, or I could just say, no, I'm just applying for the Civil Engineer Corps. And if I don't get in that, I'm not doing anything else. So I told them that's what I wanted to do.
You're not a submarine for the next 6 months. Yeah.
Right. That's what I wanted to do. The requirements are you have to have an architecture degree or an engineering degree. And there's accessions officers who are assigned to like the different regions and mm-hmm. they'll come and interview you. But most of the questions are not about your design skills or experience. It's a lot more about leadership. How have you been a leader? How would you handle these different situations? And if they have a board and they select however many people they need for that year. Mm-hmm. And if you're selected, then you get to go to OCS, which was the 12-week program. OCS is kind of like, the way I describe it in retrospect, is what I imagine it would be like to go to prison.
Oh.
So it's kind of like your stereotypical like militarization, drop down and do some push-ups, people yelling all the time. So yeah, that was the full indoctrination. But, and you know, after you get out of that, you're a little like shell-shocked, but that's not how it is day to day in the civil engineer corps. That's just kind of your, you know, initial shock training to make sure that, you know, you'll be able to handle it.
Do you have any tips for someone who might be going into that? Like what types of emotional and physical preparation did you need to do to make sure you could get through that?
So for the physical preparation, you just need to check up what the standards are for the tests for like how many, I think right now it's push-ups and planks and a run. And there's a certain number you have to do within 2 minutes and you got to run a mile and a half within a certain amount of time, depending on how old you are. So if you look at those standards, you just like want to make sure that you're like getting in the high score ranges for those, and then you should should be fine. And then the other thing is, you know, when they start yelling at you to drop down and do push-ups, like just move as quickly as you can and act like you're, you know, doing it really hard, and don't ever like, you know, stop or worry about like going slowly and getting a perfect form. Just act explosive. You could practice like yelling a lot, because they want you to yell all the time.
Okay.
You know, just get used to just mentally prepare yourself to like be yelled at. If you can do that, you just have to know like that there's a lot of head games going on, I guess, you know, just like don't take anything too seriously.
Would there be any accommodations for someone who maybe can't hit those things physically? Like, are they only looking for able-bodied people in this position, or are there exceptions for people that might need accommodations?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, it's, you have to be able to meet those standards just, you know, to be in the Navy in general. If you wanted to do the job and not be an active duty member, there are civilian positions. So in that sense, it, you know, it could still be available. It's just that, you know, when you're in the military, this is the job that I'm doing, but like whatever happens in the country, if something's needed, theoretically, you don't, you're not at liberty to say no to whatever they need you to do.
So do you have to maintain then those physical standards, or you're not in like an OAC meeting asking to drop and give 50 before we can start the meeting?
No, no, nobody's like acting like that after you've gotten out of that training on the day-to-day basis. That's kind of just like your shell shock thing, but you are expected to maintain those, and they test you once a year. But you know, if you're going through something medically once you are already in the military, then there, you know, are waivers and exceptions. I think another part of the reason why you have to meet these certain standards before you get in is because the military and the government is kind of taking responsibility for your whole physical body. So, you know, if something happens to you after you're already in, you know, you're covered, you can, you know, have waivers until you get better to be able to meet those standards. And then there's process, like if you were permanently disabled and you aren't able to do the requirements of your job, then there's processes for like getting processed out.
Yeah, that makes me think too of, so once you're in, what does your contract look like? And then what do your benefits look like? I've heard a lot about military and pensions and kind of what that looks like. So does that also apply to you?
It does, yes. So my contract is 8 years. I've done 4 years so far, or you could do 4 years active duty. And then if you wanted to get out after 4 years, you're in the inactive reserve. So it's pretty much like you're out, but if something happened and they needed to call people back, you would be called back right away. So then you would kind of be on the hook with that for the next 4 years. But yeah, I'm still staying in. We'll see how long. I enjoy it. So the benefits are pretty much everything insurance-wise is fully covered. There can be, you know, some challenges in getting appointment times. I wouldn't say there's not access to care, but you just need to like be proactive on top of it. And sometimes there can be long wait times to get your appointment. But in some ways, I think that reflects, you know, out in the general world too.
Yeah. The United States. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a good work-life balance?
I do, actually. And I think I have a better work-life balance than when I was out in the private sector. It was actually a perfect time to have my kids. My first kid, I had 12 weeks paid maternity leave. The second kid, it was 18 weeks because they changed the law. So Yeah, I can't really ask for anything better. There's also options for, you know, helping with the cost of childcare. Sometimes those can be difficult to access to because there's not there might not be enough availability. But for me, I've been able to get both my kids in the childcare center. That's one quarter of the cost of out in town. You get 30 days leave per year, but sometimes weekends have to count. So, there's a lot of really awesome benefits.
Do you have to live close to where your office is? Are you in the office all the time? And is your work location something that could change, or it's typically you're just working from XYZ location until you quit?
So when you're in the military, you will probably change jobs in the Civil Engineer Corps every like 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. So next year, it looks like we're going to be moving to California.
Okay.
But I've been able to stay in the DC area for 4 years by doing two different jobs back to back. That there's a lot of jobs open in DC, so you can kind of move to, they want you to get experience of doing all different types of things. So I could do two different jobs without moving geographically. So in that sense, it was nice. And then, you know, day to day, it depends on the job. So, you know, some jobs they're okay. Like my boss right now is like, yeah, you can telework some days if you want. But other types of jobs, you really need to be there to see what's going on. In my last job, we would have, you know, it's just a normal work day hours, like 8 hours a day. But that's, when you're in the military, it's kind of like those are the hours that you're working, but, you know, you could be called at any time. So you're not like salaried. You don't keep you are salaried, but, you know, you're not salaried based on a certain number of hours. You don't keep track of the hours that you've worked on a certain number of projects. You just, you know, whatever they tell you that you need to do, you got to do that. But for the past couple jobs I've had, it's been like a normal work day. The one job you had to stand watch. So maybe like once every couple of months, I would have to have a phone where someone could call me from on base at any time and say, you know, our electricity went out. Or one time I got a call that somebody found an alligator in their building. That was the weirdest one. Or a lot of times it would be like a tree fell down. So you could be woken up in the middle of the night with some of these crazy calls. But that's the most like restrictive mm-hmm. thing that I've had to do with life interrupting thing.
So your background is in architecture. You're working in the civil engineering portion of the Navy. And you mentioned that you were dealing with alligator phone calls and tree phone calls. These aren't things that architects would typically think that they're working with. Can you just talk through what jobs you're working on and what are your responsibility and roles on a like a more daily basis?
Yeah. So that was my last job when I was getting some of those calls. And my title was Assistant Public Works Officer. So if you think public works, you're responsible for some, you know, design and construction items, but then also, you know, where does that requirement come from in the first place that, you know, something is needed, and then also maintaining all of these things on the base after the fact. So that was really eye-opening as an architect. You know, all that stuff is happening, but to some extent, you might not really care that much. So you kind of, when people will make jokes about architects, oh, they don't care about the maintenance. You know, they didn't care that this piece of equipment wasn't going to be able to get out of the building after they designed the building around it and didn't design any doors to get it out of here. It kind of hits home. So I didn't really do any design type of work in this role. So if you're an architect and you haven't gotten the chance to work in design and you know that's something you really want to do, I might not suggest going into civil engineer corps right away, or, you know, planning to make a full 20-year career out of it, you could also, you know, try it and get out and then go work for a firm. I've known a couple people to do that. But, you know, if you want to sit and plan things out and draw things and work in Revit, you're not really going to get much opportunity to do that. There is a little bit, but I haven't done that yet. And most people don't do that in the civil engineer corps. But now my position is a construction manager. And that is a lot more relatable to what you would do in a firm, you know, with construction administration, the RFIs and submittals. But the other piece of it that I didn't get before when I worked in a firm is the pricing for changes and approving, you know, whether we want this change to be made, getting doing the contracting and understanding, you know, making modifications to the contract. That kind of stuff is more new to me, and I actually enjoy it. And it gives you a little bit, you know, you're sitting on the other side of the table from where you were before.
Mm-hmm. And will your next job be something totally different?
Yeah. So my next job will be with the CB, with a CB battalion where I'll actually deploy. I'm simultaneously like excited to do that because I think that's part of the coolest thing you get to do in the Civil Engineer Corps, but also, you know, really nervous to, you know, just want to get it over with a little bit because I have little kids and I'm like, you know, I'm going to be deployed. I'm going to be away from them for 6 months. I can't really like imagine what that's going to be like.
Yeah. And that would be so 6 months at a time over 2 years, like 6 months out, 6 months back, or how does that look?
So what it is usually, they go on rotation between being in at a home port in the U.S. for 1 year doing training, getting ready to go on that deployment. And then they go for 6 months and then they come back for a year.
Okay. Wow.
So, if I get that job for 2 years, depending on where I land in the cycle, you know, you could deploy right away and then come home and then maybe even deploy again, or, you know, you can be home for 12 months, deploy for 6 months and then be home for 6 months, or, you know, any combination.
Mm-hmm.
But wow. Yeah, when you are at home, you're still doing a lot of exercises and things.
What does that conversation look like with your partner when, like, because you'll have to move to California. Is he able to switch within the industry too? And in terms of deployment, I'm sure that's, if you have childcare through the military, that's very helpful, but it's probably, I've never encountered an architect that has gone away for a period of time and then come back. So this is the first conversation we're having on the podcast about this.
It's definitely going to be a challenging time, but one of the cool things about when I got this job, a lot of the leadership in the Navy is just, you know, so supportive and, you know, really wants you to succeed and cares about your family too. And my first captain, like, talked to Kevin, my husband, and basically got him the job. And after all this stuff we went through with COVID, I guess the benefit of it was, you know, learning that we can work remotely. Maybe sometimes it's challenging, but they've kind of already told Kevin that he can potentially just, you know, keep working at the same job, but remotely.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that should help a lot. Yeah. But also, you know, if we're moving somewhere else, there may be jobs within the same organization that he could apply for over there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm not sure if he wants to stay with NAFAC long term, or wants to, you know, go back into the private industry, but he seems to enjoy, you know, learning about government contracting and that type of stuff.
I don't think I realized that he was in NAFAC as well. So, and he also went through the becoming like an officer in enlisting, I guess, right? Rather than being a private citizen.
No, he's actually just a civilian. So actually, our organization, NAFAC, it's Naval Facilities Engineering Command. they do all of the design, construction, planning, and maintenance of shore facilities on naval bases. And then, you know, we also build things for some of the other branches of the military. So it's actually primarily a civilian organization, but the leadership is military.
Okay, that makes sense. And so most of the projects you're working on, I guess all of the projects you're working on, are those naval bases, like land, I forget what was the terminology you used, but like the on land portions of the Navy bases.
Shore facilities.
Facilities. Yeah,
so I'm in the land Navy.
Can you tell? No, I don't really know many people in the Navy or the military. Have you had a lot of relatives in the Navy or armed forces?
All of my siblings decided to. Like, our parents didn't, but my younger sister was the first one to join. She did ROTC for the Army. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, that seems pretty cool. Let me check into what you can do as an architect. So I got into the Navy. My brother enlisted in the Air Force, and now my youngest brother, he like just got sworn in last week. So he doesn't even know when he's leaving yet, but he's in the Air Force too. So somehow I guess we all just copied my sister.
She's a trendsetter. But that's really cool that you have all of that in common. I mean, there must have been something about your upbringing too that positioned all of you to succeed in this type of career path.
Yeah, I think we all were, you know, kind of always taught that it was a, you know, good thing to serve your country. Not that, you know, they did it, but my grandfather was drafted. So, you know, we've always kind of respected that. And you do get a lot of benefits, but it's a trade-off because you're not at liberty to, you know, do whatever you want with your life when you're in the military. It's like, although you think about the military as preserving liberty of our country, you're actually giving away some of your personal liberties when you join. And like, the culture is a lot more, you know, socialistic rather than democratic the way it's set up.
It seems that it's a great opportunity to be able to change positions and roles every 2 years within a larger organization. Where do you see kind of your career progressing, and are you able to retire at an earlier age because of the benefits of the military?
Yeah, so the way it's set up right now with the retirement is they have sort of a 401k type of plan that's called the TSP that they do a match for. If you want to retire from the military with a pension, you stay in for 20 years. So, you know, you're at liberty to get out before that, but if you stay in for 20 years, you retire with a pension. I think it's like 40% of whatever you made like within the last 3 years of when you get out. So that's a really good benefit. Like, I guess I waited a little while before I got in, but I would still be retiring before 50.
That's amazing.
So I think that's an awesome option. I don't know if I'll do that just because there's so many other things to do in life. Like, I don't know if I want to stay in or not.
I totally agree with that. But it seems like you have had a lot of really great adventures so far, and you have a lot of great adventures that are on the horizon.
And I appreciate you sharing about it and telling me and explaining all of kind of the process. Is there anything that you'd want to leave listeners with of maybe like why they should maybe consider the same, like the similar career path?
I think that what I would say that I'm glad that I've done is just following different opportunities as they come up and not feeling like you're going to, you know, I have to stay in this for so many years in order to have enough experience that, you know, I won't be able to go back to a firm again if I want to because I've been out of it for so long. Like, I think that's bunk. Just do whatever you want to do and, you know, there's going to be opportunities for you. Follow the opportunities that come up that resonate with you.
I think that's great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing about your story and your career. It was great catching up and also hearing more about what you've been doing since Drexel.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Architect Ed. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to share it with your network, leave us a 5-star rating and review, and follow us on social media. Reach out to the podcast directly at architectet.com. That's architect, E-T-T-E.com. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. See you then.